I couldn't stop if I wanted to. A 9-to-5 is something that I don't wanna do. Sit in the cubicle miserable as I slave away, getting complacent with life as my dreams fade away. Nah, motivation to go harder. I'd rather spit that real shit, I'd probably die martyr. They wanna ride the wave, I hope you got your surfboard, cause it's a high tide though, we try and ball like the Carters.
Good morning, good evening, good night, folks. This is your Five Tool Sports Podcast host, Woody Massey, and I'm all jacked up on Mountain Dew. This week, we'll be covering the Ravens and the Browns. But before we get to all that, we get to do one of my favorite segments that we do here at Five Tool Sports, and that is my buddy here, Calvin McLaughlin Jr., and he's going to take it over right now and give us a little test, a little quiz.
Hey, look, man, you can't be giving everybody my government name, bro.
I'm hoping somebody steals your identity after that little exchange earlier.
Well, whoever do it, man, I hope they got a lot of money so I can sue.
Welcome to Five Tool Trivia. Oh,
all right, so here we go with the Five Tool Sports Trivia. I got some good stuff for you guys today. As I told you guys before the show, I'm going to actually start to try to kind of whatever we're covering for the day to actually kind of, you know, piece that in with the trivia. So initially, I was going to do a trivia question about the 16-game season before it was 14 and now 17, but scrap all that. And I got a good one. Woody, who are we covering first today? Are we covering the Ravens or the Browns?
Let me check that line. We're going to be covering the Ravens first today, CJ.
We're covering the Ravens first. All right. So my question is, as it pertains to...
Don't hit me with no Johnny United. The Baltimore Ravens. The Baltimore Colts, please. Pardon my language.
No. I'll do that. So for the Five Tool Sports panel and... anyone who's following us on Instagram, who was the last wide receiver to have at least 1,000 receiving yards in a season for the Baltimore Ravens?
Oh, I know.
And like I said, I'm going to read the ad, and then I'm going to go in reverse order. I'm going to go Brandon, I'm going to go Nate, and I'm going to go Woody. So... hey guys, it's your boy CSPN, and you know I love watching and analyzing football. There's nothing that trumps the CSPN eye test, but let's be real, the numbers do matter. If you want to make sure the numbers match your eye test, give our sister site a check at www.footballscout365.com, created by our own Brandon Lundberg. Football Scout 365 has an in-depth analysis for pro and college football. Football Scout 365 has numerous tools such as an NFL situational analysis tool, NFL free agent analysis tool, and the oh so important NFL mock drafts, which are red hot right now. I use Football Scout 365 daily, and you should too. So again, go on over to footballscout365.com. Without further ado, no one except for my man Woody followed the instructions. So I don't know who is cheating and who won't. So we going to go with Woody first. Who was the last receiver to have at least 1,000 receiving yards for the Baltimore Ravens?
I had my initial answer that I wanted to like blurt out, but now I'm thinking there's one other dude. I'm deciding between I'm going to say Derek Mason, but it might be Torrey Smith.
All right. Good guess. Brandon, your go.
Wide receiver, right?
Yeah, who was the last wide receiver to have at least 1,000 yards receiving for the Baltimore Ravens?
Steve Smith.
Oh, yeah, he did go there his last year, didn't he? I forgot about that. But he didn't get 1,000 yards, so you're wrong.
And last, but definitely not least, Nasty Nate Parker. Jeremy who's the last Maitland. Wide receiver to have?
Jeremy Maclin.
That's right.
That's a man.
That is.
I totally forgot he even went to the Ravens. That might be it. As sus, you went to the kitchen and pulled Jeremy Macklin out your ass. I said that's sus. You went to the kitchen and pulled Jeremy Macklin out your ass. I'm just saying.
I was gonna say Steve Smith, and then I remembered Jeremy Macklin. All right. I don't actually know if it's right, but
who?
It was a good pick.
Who was the last wide receiver to have at least 1,000 receiving yards for the Baltimore Ravens? Woody gave me Derek Mason. Brandon gave me Steve Smith, and Nate gave me Jeremy Macklin. Without further ado, the answer is Mike Wallace.
Oh, wow. The Joe Flacco, the first year he signed that big contract, right? Oh, man.
He left the Steelers, right?
That's right. That's a good one.
I don't even know if it was the first year that he left the Steelers.
No, he signed with Minnesota, didn't he?
I think he went to the Vikings. And then he went to Baltimore.
Yep.
Okay.
Man, he was fast. Mike Wallace. And
that was in 2016.
People don't remember.
Steve Smith was actually the best guess. Steve Smith did it in 2014.
For the Ravens? Mm. He got over 1,000? Damn, well, I eat my words, Brandon.
Dude, Steve Smith played very well with the Ravens.
For that, that 1 year, he was great for him. I remember that. All right.
Let's segue this into some Ravens talk, though,
Ravens
baby.
Ravens talk.
Yeah.
So let's do a little synopsis last year, the Ravens season. The Ravens, they started off slow. They lost a Hall of Fame offensive guard in Marshall Yanda. They come in and they say, you know, everyone looked at them as a Super Bowl contender. Last year they came in, they dominated. They were the number one seed in the AFC. Then they lost to the Chiefs. Because they jumped out to an early lead. And, you know, as we know, Lamar Jackson in this offense has had troubles throwing from behind. And so this year we saw them struggling with their line. They're not getting the same push up the middle that they did when they had Marshall Yanda. Ronnie Staley gets injured halfway through the year. But somehow, having a great veteran coach in John Harbaugh, he leveled out the ship. He got them going by the end of the year. He got them back into playoff mode. And they started making some noise towards the end of the year. And our own even sees CSPN McLaughlin. I remember he was right there. He loved them going to the playoffs. And they even looked great against the Tennessee Titans, dominating that game. Tennessee couldn't do anything. But then when they got matched up to someone they fell behind, Lamar Jackson just showed, well, is it the fact that he doesn't have a wide receiver? He thought it was enough that he doesn't have a wide receiver to come out this offseason and say something about not having a wide receiver. Can he do it? So that's pretty much where the Ravens are at right now. They've had two winning seasons. They made it to the playoffs. They had Super Bowl aspirations, and they fell short. And now everything is on the shoulders of their young star quarterback, Lamar Jackson. And can he take that next leap throwing? So what did the Ravens do this offseason? They went out. They whiffed on all the early top wide receiver targets. Apparently they offered Juju Smith-Schuster more money than he got in multiple years from Pittsburgh. And one of the other wide receivers, I can't remember which one. I don't think it was Kenny Galladay. It was a different one. But they ended up with Sammy Watkins. Sammy's good for one big game a year, right? So does Sammy Watkins move the chain?
Does he change
this offense? See, why don't you start it off?
Sammy Watkins does not move the chains. Look, the best ability is availability. Me and Nate, we preach this all the time. Sammy Watkins, he's only played 16 games once in his career. That was his rookie year. The Ravens essentially just flushed $6 million down the toilet. I had a few idiots hit me up on social media, say, oh, Sammy Watkins, that's a good deal, blah, blah, blah. They just gave him $6 million. If only he can stay healthy. Again, he hasn't played 16 games since his first year in football. In the last 5 years, he hasn't had a year over 700 yards receiving. So that's bad Sammy. The good Sammy, where he fits with Baltimore, he's a great blocker. He's physical. Baltimore, they run first. You need your receivers to block on the edge. Miles Boykin is another player who's a good receiver, who's good at blocking as well. So maybe they can break some big runs here and there. But, he's a decent receiver, but he's a good blocker.
He had a lot of hype coming out of college.
But they definitely have to go receiver here in the draft. He had some hype. He definitely hasn't lived up to it.
At all. Like, he's been more of a bust.
Similar speed and profile to Claypool. Miles but he just Boykin? Hasn't put it together.
Yeah, that, yeah, I can see that.
So they played with Claypool at Notre Dame.
My man Rob Stacks here on live bring up a good point. He says Juju would have been a great pickup for the Ravens. And we heard some, you know, some rumors about that, but it just never happened.
I just said it in the intro. He actually turned down more money, multiple year contract from the Ravens to go back to the Steelers.
Yeah.
That means Juju doesn't have faith in Lamar Jackson's arm. That's just what that means straight up.
I think Juju more or less wants to wait out more money in the long run. I feel like he's it doesn't make sense not to go to the Ravens.
It does if you don't think Lamar Jackson can throw you the football.
He can
throw. Maybe Juju doesn't think that.
I mean, he's pretty accurate. He's sometimes.
I think it was more so Juju's just being loyal. I mean, he loves Pittsburgh and he's selfless. Yeah, I've been on record saying he's selfless. So I don't think it's a knock on Lamar Jackson. I think Lamar Jackson can throw the ball. I don't think he's a great passer, but I don't think he's a bad thrower to where receivers don't want to come and play with him. If anything, the offense is more so a deterrent for receivers coming there as opposed to Lamar Jackson, in my opinion.
I think they need a guy who can win on the outside more. Like, I think Hollywood's not going to be the answer on the outside. They need to find a way to find a guy who can win on the outside.
Kenny Golladay would have been nice.
Obviously, yeah, that a rangy receiver where, go up and get it type of guy. I think that they're probably going to do that in the draft, and we'll talk about that when we get to that point.
Well, throw us some prospects that you might think, Brandon.
I'll throw that out there first, I guess. For the Ravens, there's a couple receivers out there. I like Terrace Marshall from LSU. Also, you know, they could wait around maybe second or third round and get a bigger, you know, 6'4" receiver in like Nico Collins from Michigan, for example, who just ran a 4.4 at his pro day. So another guy that very comparable to Chase Claypool.
No,
yeah,
it's
another Chase Claypool type receiver.
I love you, Brandon. So disagree. Yeah, No, he's not.
No,
Brandon's a UM homer right now. Bro, I never say this about you. You're being a UM homer right now. Claypool
listen,
was so big.
There's three or four guys that I can say from Michigan right now that are so underrated and undervalued because they've been underdeveloped or underutilized at Michigan in the offense or even on the defensive side of the football that they're being overlooked or they've lost draft value. I mean, it's almost like robbery for some of these guys. Nico Collins was a legit – he shouldn't have sat out, number one. Like, he should have, but he had to. I think there were some other circumstances with him for 2020.
Kobe.
But that's a guy who could have benefited by playing. Right. He could have benefited
these guys
a lot,
from
you
watch
Michigan's offense.
These guys that you're referring to, they have average careers at Michigan, 4-star, 5-star guys, and then they, as you say, they're underdeveloped, and then they go to the league, and what do? They have average subpar seasons. Name the last guy from a Michigan receiver who's been like, man, this guy's good.
Because
some of the guys you're referring to, Nico Collins, Donovan Peoples-Jones.
No.
Yeah, bro, we got to go back 10
about-
years for that.
I'm talking about the regime. See, that's where you guys get caught up in that thought process. You know, people say the same thing about
production?
Justin Fields and Ohio State quarterbacks. People say that about Ohio State quarterbacks. And then they try to compare Justin Fields in that same mindset. Now, when you say that about Michigan receivers, there is a guy who came out. It was Donovan Peoples-Jones. I mean, he tested hella good at his pro day last year. He tested hella good at the combine. And then look what he was able to do as a rookie. Excuse me?
It's pretty good. I'm a fan of Peoples-Jones.
That's a guy who could take that year two jump in the Browns offense, for example.
I just don't like that you're comparing him to Chase Claypool. Chase Claypool, 6'4", almost 240, like
he's a freak
athlete, big shoulders. And? Like Nico Collins isn't that. Nico Collins is 6'3".
He's 6'4".
Not big shoulders. He's lean. He's about 215. He's just a different player. I mean, I don't see Chase Claypool.
Stylistically, I forget about that part.
As far as impact. You're saying as far as impact.
Stylistically, they play the same. Like I see Nico Collins in the same sense as Chase Claypool in terms of how they're able to utilize their body, especially to wall off defenders and make plays. That's something that Nico Collins could do that Michigan wasn't doing enough of. When they did it, he won at a high rate. There's a statistic for this. There's a blog site that I follow. I believe he wins like literally 50-50 balls at a better than 50% rate when Michigan actually gave him that opportunity. So there are some things out there that point to the correlation that I think matches up. Now, again, Terrace Marshall, that's another guy. Terrace Marshall, I think for the Ravens, though, the reason why I don't kind of like that one as much as I did when I first looked at it is he might be more of a slot guy early on, somebody who will play inside, move outside. They need a true X receiver. So it depends on what they're looking at and where they can find value, where they're at, whether that's going to happen in the first round or not. I feel like Marshall is a guy who will go in the first round. Again, you could get Nico Collins in round two. So that's a 4-4 guy, great hands, good body control, exactly what you need on the outside. But those are just draft prospects. But in touching on that Lamar Jackson stuff that we were just discussing, because I do want to hit on it just real quick.
Wait. We're going to go.
Look at what the Browns have done for Baker Mayfield, for example. They have surrounded him with so much to try to help with any deficiencies he has so that they can get it to a point to where the only excuse is Baker Mayfield, where the Ravens, they haven't done that white to the extent with Lamar. There's some pieces around Lamar. They need to surround him as much as possible.
They drafted wide receiver in the first and second round. They got him some running back help. They had a tight ends that they had drafted. They went a different way about it. The Browns went and already signed established talent, giant, massive contracts.
Right. And that's where the Ravens have missed, literally 2 years in a row. They needed a receiver. It was obvious a year ago. What are they going to do now? They signed Sammy Watkins, which I like. It's a legit pickup. To touch on CJ and everybody else's point there about his injury history, that's a big deal. You're going to need a guy who can make it 16 games, get into the playoffs, and have an impact. You're also still waiting on a guy who can play on the outside. So who's that going to be? Who's your true X receiver? Who are you going to put out there?
Yeah.
The guy who can go up and get it and move the chains in key moments.
I don't think people understand how much having a true number one wide receiver will improve Hollywood Brown's game, too. The fact that they won't be able to cheat on him over the top.
Now, Watkins adds to the versatility of the offense, right? You got a guy who you can line Watkins up just about anywhere in the formation. But again, you add that extra piece. And you're forcing man coverage against Watkins. You're forcing man coverage against Hollywood or the tight ends. And then you've got Lamar on a third. You had mentioned in the show notes, the third down, can Watkins be the guy moving the chains on third down? Well, he can be hypothetically in addition to that, because when defenses have to focus on the receivers more and take their eyes off of Lamar Jackson can pick up plays with his legs and make even more things happen, which that's the big difference between Lamar and Baker that sets him apart. That's where I believe Lamar has the ability to get to the promised land versus Baker Mayfield. It's that one added element.
I agree.
Let's transition over to the Ravens defense. So what we've seen the Ravens do over the past few years, there's an interesting article about this over on ESPN. You should go check it out if you guys haven't. The Ravens have become like the Patriots when it comes to their outside edge rushers. They feel like they can manufacture an elite edge rusher that they draft and really build him up. So what they've been doing is allowing these young guys to play out their rookie deals, put up some elite numbers, go to another team, get paid, and then after a few mediocre years, they get cut and they're coming back to the fold. And we're seeing them do that. They let Judon walk this year after grading out as the fourth or fifth best edge player, and they brought back Pernell McPhee, who, if you remember, a few years ago, he had some monster numbers with the Ravens, and he signed that big deal with the Browns. Bears, and things haven't really worked out for him, and now they're bringing Pernell McPhee back into the fold. So we got Pernell McPhee, and then they're probably going to have Tyrus Bowser fill in for the edge where Judon, he played similarly to how Judon's style was, holding that edge on the side. But could you see possibly the Ravens taking an edge player in the draft in the first round, such as Amika Parsons, if he gets to that range. I mean, it seems like no one's really been talking about him in the top 10, like, because everyone's been so quarterback and offensive obsessed this year.
You know, I think Michael Parsons would be a great fit for that Baltimore defense. He's versatile. Yeah. He'll be able to play the inside linebacker position, or you can bring him off the edge. However, because he opted out this past year, I don't think there's a lot of talk about him. You're hearing, you know, about all these other guys going in the top 10. I think Michael Parsons will probably sneak somewhere in the top 13 or 14 picks. I think they're being quiet for a reason.
Well, it's almost, I mean, he got some of his thunder stolen at his pro day.
His film is great.
He almost got some of his thunder stolen at his film day from that defensive end from Penn State, who ran like a 4.38 or whatever, 40, which is insane at like 260. But like, yeah. So maybe because he was supposed to be the athletic freak, I feel like I heard a lot more things about that dude and not the overall athleticism of Micah Parsons.
Yeah, because the edge rusher is what matters the most, and that's what Jason Owe is.
Yeah,
for Penn State, the guy that you're referring to, and look, true edge rusher versus
Baltimore needs to go receiver with their first pick, period. Yeah, they could go edge. They could go any one of the linebacker spots. They need to go receiver, period.
No, I agree with you there. Well, I mean, as Baltimore's running game goes, their offense goes. So, obviously, Lamar, he had another 1,000-yard season last year. It's wild saying quarterback had 2,000-yard seasons in a row. People just really don't put enough respect on that. That's crazy. But Mark Ingram, Big Truss, ask about me. He's gone. He went by way of the Houston Texans, just grasping on for those last few paydays before he takes that long walk back to Alabama. But Dobbins and Gus Edwards in the second half last year showed to be dominant at times. Dobbins really looked like he was hitting his stride there. He's starting to bust big, long runs, even up through the middle at his size. Them as a 1-2 punch. Do we see them really like take off this year? What I'm leaning towards is, are we going to see like 1,000-yard seasons from Dobbins and like 600 from Gus Bus?
I can see something like that for sure. I think Dobbins, I think he hits that next level. I still think Gus will get a considerable amount of touches, but I mean, I see J.K. Dobbins going for well over 1,000 all-purpose yards from scrimmage for sure.
I can see it the other way around.
Oh, yeah?
I mean, Gus is going to take over the starting position?
I could see it. Go, CJ.
See, I think JK is going to have majority of the touches and the yards. I think Gus might have majority of the touchdowns because their skill set is different. Gus is better between the tackles. JK, yeah, he's a zone stretch, get him out in the open, throw him the ball type thing. So that's what I think. But I think Dobbins, just watching him, like, he, even last year, he was the most talented player in that backfield. And Gus had some big games, and he runs hard, and I love him. But just on a sheer talent perspective, it's JK by a mile. And I think we'll see a lot more usage with JK. I think it'll be like a 60-40 split.
The dynamic play ratio that you get having like a run option with J.K. Dobbins and Lamar Jackson is very high. Like, one of those dudes is very capable of taking it to the house. Gus is more like you're down to down back. Like, he's going to pick up yards in chunks, but both of those dudes have home run potential. And that's hard to guard, especially on the option. Lastly, before we move on from the Baltimore Ravens, Kevin Zeitler, they added him in the offseason. He's going to fill in for Marshall Yonda. We saw that hole in the guard position, and that's where they were having their trouble up the middle most of the year. That could really bounce this offense back, right? Like, I personally think that could boost them to the back to elite running up the middle.
Yeah, it's a big get from the standpoint. And Brandon, we talked about this early in the season last year. I think after the first 6 weeks, you had brought up a stat about Lamar Jackson was like facing like the most pressure, the more pressure up the middle in his face than he was in his previous years there. So obviously, Woody, as you pointed out, Marshall Yanda not being there, and then just that offensive line being banged up was a detriment to them. Zeitler, his PFF grade has dropped his last 3 years. However, they're not asking him to come in and really be a stalwart for the offensive line. He's just kind of a role player. You have your bookend left tackle in Stanley. You got your bookend right tackle in Orlando Brown, who did request a trade earlier this offseason. And then you feel Zeitler in there. So I think it was a good get. It was definitely a good get for Baltimore. And look, I want to say they're going to have a down year this coming up year. But some of the moves that they're making, they haven't done a lot, but they're keeping the ship steady.
Mm-hmm. All right. I like that. Well, so let's put it on wax. Like, what do we see? Let's say they get a number one wide receiver, an ex-wide receiver in the first round, and they're rocking with the defense right now with the dudes that they have, filling in for Judon, bringing back Pernell McPhee. Ravens have Super Bowl aspirations again next year? Are we getting a little bit of, like, I guess for lack of a better term, voters fatigue on, because we've expected them to make a run in the last 2 years? Do we see them coming back next year and making a run?
It's all about Lamar.
Does Lamar? I mean, here's a better one. Does Lamar take the next step next year? Does Lamar throw for 30 over under 3,700 yards next year?
No, bro. Let's go 4K.
A good way to measure it. I don't think
why because he threw for 2,700 this year.
We shouldn't.
Why I did under 4K. But that's why I put it under 4K. I mean, that's why I said the over under 3,500 yards. Like that. That's an extra 700.
You get him some help on the outside, maybe. But I think that what he's done the past couple of years is phenomenal. Regardless, he could rush for another 1,000-1,200 yards. They just need to get into the playoffs and actually, you know,
I like
prove
Brandon.
That they can get past.
That's coach right there. Coaches, all they care about is production. So Coach Lundberg right here, he's like, look, I don't care how you do it. As long as he's giving me production and that offense is efficient.
2,000 yards.
Brandon don't give a damn how they do it. I dig it.
Just keep him upright.
Fair enough. What do you think, CJ?
Because everything about the Ravens is untraditional, right? Like everything about them is untraditional in a sense. So
do you see Lamar taking that next step of the passer? Would you say he throws for over 3,500 yards next year?
I wouldn't bet my nuts on it.
All right. Nate, how about you, man?
I do not think the Ravens will even make the playoffs next
year.
Whoa. Would you bet your nuts on it, though?
I'm not betting my nuts on anything in regards to the NFL. But I'll put it on wax.
Wow.
The Ravens struggled this year to make the playoffs.
So you're going to wax your balls. Did I get this right? You're going to wax your balls if they... You said you're going to put it on wax.
Well, I mean, everyone's putting it on wax. You're going to wax your balls if you're wrong?
I mean, hey, we can go live with this. Whatever we got to do to get some following, man. I'll wax my balls.
Okay, so make a bet. Loser has to whack their balls.
Wait, what are we doing?
We're all putting it on wax. Put your take on wax.
Oh, the Ravens are making the playoffs. I know that.
Brandon, this is great.
I can say that without.
I'm sorry, Nate. This is awesome talk. So by time week one starts, we all have to go out on a limb and make a – we got to go out on a limb with a prediction, a bold prediction. And if you're right, you don't have to wax your balls. If you're wrong, you got to wax your balls.
I mean, that's a bold prediction. But I see what Nate's looking at here. If Joe Burrow took the next step, I don't see four teams from the AFC North making the playoffs.
It's less of my belief in the other teams in that division, and I just don't think the Ravens are that good. I could very well be wrong. Like, Lamar had his MVP season. What has he shown us since then?
I mean, he still rushed for 1,000 yards last year, 2016.
Look, the Ravens, what saved the Ravens this past year was that weak schedule down the stretch.
That's
like,
true.
We can say, oh, the Ravens started playing well. Jim Harbaugh did this. Man, they was playing a terrible schedule down the stretch.
And I think that definitely helped them. I just don't believe in that system. And I don't think every year since Lamar's sophomore season.
Where?
Decline.
You didn't believe right. in it?
So y'all haven't made the playoffs. Nate said they're going to miss the playoffs.
Proven system.
Anyone bold enough?
I was thinking about doing a show on that system.
That'd be interesting. I'd love to learn more about Greg Roman's offense.
It's like the army.
Brandon, I'm not saying – so I think the offense is innovative enough, but I think Lamar doesn't have enough facets to his game to be able to make it
work. I'm so annoyed by this conversation. The people in the chat group of our fantasy league talking shit, they don't even know what they're fucking looking at. Number one, here's the thing. Like Lamar's skill set and all this talk about whether he can hit an open man or not and all that bullshit, like – he is what he is as an athlete, and what the Ravens are doing, it's not because they're limited because of Lamar. They're limited because they're not putting the weapons around him. You add a couple more weapons, you scheme some things up for him, you get him out on the edge as a thrower more often, things are going to happen. It's not him missing receivers. Sometimes the receivers mess up too. There is a stat for this. I mean,
he straight up did miss wide receivers last year.
Brandon, he sails the football sometimes on some of the deeper routes. Yes. I understand that, but he's not.
And the routes towards the sidelines too.
Put all of that. How many times has Lamar picked up a first down with his legs? No other player could ever do.
He's I'm not taking away from everyone, that. We're just talking about his throwing. We're just talking about his throwing.
Right, right. But his throwing, there isn't another level for Lamar. I don't see him improving as a passer much more than what he is, but you've got to surround him with weapons.
So it's got to be schemes
up. Because I tell you what, yeah, which is fine. But then you scheme things around a guy like that. Imagine him in Kyle Shanahan's system where he's running the play action, he's rolling out, and there's a hell of a run game, for example. Look at what he would be able to do in that kind of an element with guys that are wide open. Hell, you don't have to overthrow people. You can underthrow the motherfuckers. Just make sure they
get the
balls thrown to them.
The problem with that is, though, that he plays in a division with Patrick – in a conference with Patrick Mahomes. So the people that are talking about the concerns for his throwing arm, it is that he cannot play from behind because he cannot lead an aerial attack when they're from behind. That's what the main topic about his throwing is.
He did win a game down by more than 10, so he already got that
much off
the back.
That's true.
Look, I think maybe we should take a little bit of the pressure maybe off of Lamar Jackson and maybe put it on that front office and that general manager. Mm-hmm. Because right now, if we go through the Ravens roster from top to bottom, the only thing we can say is they got a unicorn on their roster named Lamar Jackson that's keeping everything afloat. True. If that roster didn't have Lamar Jackson on it, it wouldn't sniff the playoffs.
Who replaced Ozzie?
I mean, really.
Who was it? What's his name? You replaced Ozzie Newsome?
Some white.
Yeah. I mean, Ozzie groomed him to replace him, but.
I mean, they're doing good in the draft. They just, man, the receiver thing is driving me nuts. Like, what, you don't want to play in this offense? Like,
no, I ain't a.
Juju didn't want to play in this
offense. I would love to know what Juju has to say about that. It'd be interesting. Someone can catch that in the years to come. But that's going to wrap us up here for the Ravens. Now we're going to move on to the Browns in a couple minutes, but actually we're going to try out something new today. We're going to slide it back over to my boy CSPN, and he's going to give us some Browns trivia. Let's see what's going on.
Welcome to 5-Tool Trivia.
Without further ado, and we can do it in reverse order than we did it last time. So we can go Nate, Brandon, Woody. But without further ado, who has the most Pro Bowls in Cleveland Browns history? Woody, you can start reading your ad whenever.
Hey, it's Woody here. If you love sports, the 5-Tool Sports, we got it all. You can find the 5-Tool Sports podcast in all major streaming services: Apple, Spotify, Anchor FM, SoundCloud. You should go all over and follow the Instagram page at the number 5-Tool Sports podcast for some good laughs and great news. check out the website over at number5toolsportspodcast.com, where you can follow all our socials, our newsletters, get updates on Football Scout 365, and all of our YouTube content. And if you ain't there, you're nowhere. 5toolsportspodcast.com.
All right, so without further ado, the question, and no one followed the rules. We got to do, maybe, you know what?
I'm going to
get everybody to clappers, right?
This.
The entire I'm gonna get time. Everybody some clappers.
I was reading. All right, how can so I cheat?
Who has the most Pro Bowls in Cleveland Browns history?
I already got the answer. I know
Nate, we're going to start with you.
Joe Thomas.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Ooh, that's probably
that's it. What my I thought it was.
And Brandon?
I'll just Bernie.
Kosa!
All right. And
I think it's Joe Thomas.
Joe Thomas. That does. I think it is. Actually.
All right. Who has the most Pro Bowls in Cleveland Browns history?
It's not Tim Couch, that's for sure.
Oh man, answer, I remember that.
The answer is Joe Thomas with 10.
Boom.
Now, for extra credit, can you give me second and third on the
Ooh,
list?
Ooh. Okay. All right. Let me think here.
Jim Brown.
Hey, good yeah. job, Brandon.
Yep.
Jim Brown.
You'll never guess number three, but he does have. Jim Brown is number two. You never guess number three, but I'll give you a hint. He has an award named after him.
Oh.
College football award named after him.
Jim Thorpe?
No. No. It's not Nagurski, Lombardi, or
it's not. It's wait, no, it's not Belindikoff. Belindikoff played.
Use the Raiders.
Oh my God!
What's the offensive it's lineman be, award name?
Me
I can't
either.
Remember
because they never get any credit.
The Mackey.
That's right.
You got the Mackey.
The Mackey is the tight end. Outland.
The Nagurski. Remington is the Sitlin. Is the center.
Remington.
Yeah.
What else?
Is all it, right, you guys won't get
it. Is it special that. Teams?
Thorpe? Jim Thorpe. Jim Thorpe from
I
Michigan.
Said Jim Thorpe
and,
already,
and
bro.
I hear y'all clicking anyway. The answer is...
I said Jim Thorpe.
Lou Groza.
Lou Groza.
Damn it.
Damn.
The yep. kicker.
Yeah.
Respect.
I didn't know that either.
I'm surprised no one guessed Jim Brown.
Shout out Phil Dawson.
No.
The Cleveland.
Brandon did.
No,
Brandon
I mean,
said
I
Jim
mean
Brown?
The, on for the first guess. Sorry.
Because they didn't have Pro Bowls back then for his whole career.
Wait, then how is he second on the
because
list?
Because it started during the middle of his career.
He's like, yeah, I'll participate.
So
in
Joe
this.
Thomas has got 10. How many does Jim Brown have?
9.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, how
Jim Brown was
and Lou Groza has 9.
I could tell you some.
Wait, so who's well, so technically they're tied for second. Who's fourth?
I don't know.
No,
all right. I didn't look that far. I think it was
far.
A guy.
Kellen
named,
Winslow Jr.
It was a guy I didn't know. No, bro, the Cleveland Browns actually has like the leader of their like all time like career passing yards. Some dude named like Steep or Stipe, like
Steep,
Brandon
Stipe
or something. I don't. Maybe it's Steve.
He's from
Bay.
Ohio.
I
maybe
know.
That's a fan.
Kenny Stable.
Kenny Stabler.
No,
that's a Raider,
him.
Bud. Yeah.
Okay. Well,
that's a yeah. Kenny Stabler went to Super Bowls.
Yeah, and I got some other research. I'm ready to load up and shoot at you guys when we get to this Browns discussion.
All right.
I see some notes that you got on the outline.
Well, let's check it out. So, let's go and talk about the Browns. Let's talk about their big shiny free agent signing. Their big guy that they brought in that's going to push this young defense over the top to an elite defense in the NFL. We're talking move them from the middle of the pack, top 10 maybe. That's what they're thinking. I'm speaking from their perspective. They took my boy John Johnson III from the Rams, who held it down on the back end for them last year, allowed Jalen Ramsey to be able to cheat over the top. He had his best season. He's been developing each year a little bit better, a little bit better. And last year, it really all came together. And he got paid by the Cleveland Browns this year. Does he shore up that defense, boys?
Definitely makes it better. That's for sure.
Yeah, he makes them better. I'm not sure if it's a needle mover. I mean, he moves the needle a bit, but I don't know. I just don't see him as coming in, like, being all pro, you know, like defensive player of the year, anything like that. I think he helps the back end of that defense, which I already liked. You know, you got Denzel Ward there. If he can stay healthy, he was a bit
injured. Yeah, he's been in and out.
Year, but, you know, with the rush, or, you know, with their front seven, having Myles Garrett up there, I think it's a good pickup. But, you know, it remains to be seen. Whenever you see players, especially safeties and corners, when they change teams and they go into a different scheme or even a scheme that's fairly similar, we can sometimes see a drop-off. So I'm a big fan of John Johnson. He had a great year last year, year before last with the Rams. I remember having to console you, Woody, when I broke you the news that John Johnson was leaving the Rams.
But, I was very sad.
I mean, hey.
Now you just got to figure out what to do with Grant Delpit.
Yeah.
Hey, put him in the box, man. Put him in the box. Like,
that's what I was already thinking that. You could.
It's modern NFL.
Yeah. Let's give a little synopsis. I went in a little early. What happened to the Browns last year? So the Browns, this was huge for the Browns' history as a team. They had a lot of hype, Baker Mayfield. Maybe he take the next step. They had a healthy Odell, healthy Jarvis Landry. They went out, signed Austin Hooper. They got Bradley Chubb. They got Kareem Hunt to re-sign on a cheaper deal for that at-home discount. Their offensive line, one of the best in the NFL. They looked like they were ready to take the step. And you know what? People were on the fence in the beginning of the year, but they did it. It may not have been the prettiest, but they did it. They shed that monkey off the back. They got to the playoffs. They even beat the Pittsburgh Steelers to solidify that playoff appearance at the end of the year. Even though Ben didn't play, they had that Myles Garrett, Mason Rudolph reunion. Shout out to sportsmanship. Dapped each other up before the game. Maybe he's whispered sweet N-words into each other's ear. And they made the playoffs, though. They accomplished what they wanted to do as a franchise. Now it's about taking that next step in consistency. Can they do it back to back? Can they be a winning franchise in the NFL year in, year out? And they have Baker on that cheap deal still. And he looked horrible at the beginning of the year last year, though. Let's get that on wax. He was throwing some of the worst passes I've ever seen. I watched a lot of early Browns football, but halfway through the year, he started picking it up. Right, and honestly, oddly enough, it was right after Odell Beckham went out with injury. And this has been twice that Odell's gone out and he started playing better. So I bring you this question. Will Odell Beckham Jr. be a Brown next year? And is there something to the thought process that Baker Mayfield plays better without Odell on the field because he doesn't have to worry about getting a star receiver the ball?
So I'm going to go out on a limb, and I'm going to make a bold prediction that OBJ gets traded between now and week 8 of the NFL season. I would almost bet my nuts on it. OBJ, he's due roughly $15 million this year. However, if Cleveland, if they trade him, they'll save the $15 million. If they decide to cut him, if they're idiots, then they would have to pay that $15 million, and that would be dead money. So I guess the way his contract's constructed, they can trade him off. Whoever trades for him will have to pay his remaining contract. So that's good for the Browns. I think it only makes sense to flip OBJ for, hey, if you can get a first, get a first. If you can get a second, get a second. But I think the Browns, they've kind of showed that they don't need him. And honestly, outside of Kansas City and Tampa Bay, Cleveland Browns going into the 2021 season might be the scariest team in the eyes of other teams, just with that run game, the potential on defense. And I don't expect Baker to necessarily regress. So, I mean, hey.
So you see Baker in the second half last year being the Baker we see today or next year?
Yeah, I mean, look. It's,
he can be that.
I don't think Baker did anything special. It's the scheme. It was the offense. They ran a lot of play action, which is don't let it blind you. It's every quarterback's best friend. All right. So when you see stuff, oh, so and so throws better in play action. Majority of your quarterbacks gonna be better in play action. Okay, especially if the offense can run the ball. Like I said, it's just more of a scheme thing. Even if Baker has reached his potential, which that kind of remains to be seen. this team as it stands is a playoff team. Like, that's their floor. If they can run the ball, stay healthy, their floor is 10-6 playoffs.
Hmm.
I think Baker, you know, scheme-wise, just to touch on that, just getting him out on the edge like they did. I think, though, in order for them to grow, they're going to have to add to that. He's going to have to get a little bit better at the things he's uncomfortable doing in the pocket, standing
drop
in.
Drop back passing.
You know, yeah. Yep. He's going to have to do that. But, I mean, they can win the way that they were playing, but teams are going to figure that out with the film and, you know.
You know, I do feel you on that, Brandon. In order for the Browns to get better, Baker has to do those things that he's not good at better. However, I don't care how much film you watch, you can't really scheme to really stop the run. Like, if a team is good at running the ball, you could load the box all you want to, but you can't put no more than 8 guys in the box. And if you can't stop them with 8 guys in the box, then Baker's gonna he's gonna do okay. Right. I have some advanced numbers between 2020 and 2019. Baker Mayfield, his on-target throw percentage was 74.8 this past year, as opposed to 2019, it was 70.6%. So that's almost a 5% difference in on-throw target rate. In 2019, he had 20 batted balls. In 2020, he had 8 batted balls. And just going back to the bat to the on target percentage, statistically he had less bad throws in 2020 than he did in 2019. And out of those bad throws, a whopping 12 of them came in one game against Pittsburgh this past year. So, I mean, it's Baker's trending in the right way. I don't think he's a superstar quarterback, but I do think he's good enough to win a Super Bowl.
I agree with you there, CJ. I don't think he's a superstar like some people thought he would be, then the number one pick. But I think you can win the Super Bowl.
And look, I preface that by saying this. What I just said about Baker Mayfield, I used to say about Jimmy G and Kirk Cousins and Jared Goff. And then 3, 4, 5 years went by. So, which means I'm saying this now, but in 3, 4 years from now, I might say, well, Baker Mayfield's in the same tier with Kirk Cousins, Jimmy G, and Jared Goff. I'm just preface it. But at one point, I believe Kirk Cousins, you could win a Super Bowl with him. Jared Goff, all of them. But at this point, no. Baker Mayfield may be the next in line for that. Hope I'm wrong. I like Baker. He got a lot of swag and bravado with him. So
nice. So what do you feel about Odell, Brandon? Do you think Odell's rehab looks like it's going great? Do you see him bouncing back as a Pro Bowl wide receiver, or do you see the Browns moving on? And from a coaching perspective, how do you – can that be a distraction to a young quarterback trying to force the ball to a guy that's making, like, mad money? That's what it really feels like when he's on the field with Baker.
Yeah. I think Baker tries to feed it to him. I think they're friends, so they're probably communicating a lot, and he's just trying to feed him, you know? And I don't know. I think that they might be better off moving on. I don't know what they're going to do, how they're going to handle it, but – I think OBJ just needs a different.
I think so too. Yeah.
Setting, you know, bring send him back somewhere to the Giants. Like San Francisco. Yeah.
Nate, how do you feel about Baker's second half last year? I know you're a big Baker Mayfield guy, especially from his days in college.
I like Baker's attitude. I've always liked Baker's attitude. It's win at all costs. I don't give a. I especially loved his interactions with Hugh Jackson, pre and post Hugh Jackson being let go from the organization.
My man Hugh got a raw deal, man.
I mean, I don't disagree, but like, I love when Hugh went over to shake Baker's hand and Baker's like, you literally left to go coach for the enemy. I'm not shaking your hand. And plus then Hugh Jackson talked a bunch of crap on Baker. So I was like, I have no problem with that. I love how he improved. Over the back half of the season, I hope he continues to improve. I think he has all the tangible talent that you look for, the markers you look for to be successful in the NFL. Dialing in some of the intermediate throws in his accuracy would substantially help his game.
Baker. Baker coming in, Nate. Sorry, I didn't want to interrupt you. I thought you were finishing your point. I wanted to touch on this before we hopped over, but Baker, to your point there, when he came into the NFL, he wasn't considered to be like a big time superstar. He was considered to be that NFL ready guy. Mm-hmm. So he might already be where he's going to be. Like, this is probably, this could be his ceiling. He's not really going to get stronger. He's not going to get faster. He can process information quicker. That's where his biggest improvements are going to be. But go ahead.
And I 100% see where you're coming from on that, Brandon. Yep. Specifically because of his size and stature. But I can also see just improving throwing mechanics and torque from the hips, similar to what Brady has done late on in his career, to like that. That's literally how Brady can still throw 45 yards in the air down the field, is because he engages his hips rather than throwing completely from his arm. Like Patrick Mahomes can throw 60 yards. Patrick Mahomes, Josh Allen, Baker, they can throw the ball 60 yards down the field.
Still have dreams about that throw in the Super Bowl.
with just their arm. They don't need to use their hips. They don't have to plant through the ground. And same thing with Aaron Rodgers at this point. Right. But if you learn how to do that now, your 40-yard bomb with just your arm now becomes a 65-yard throw through the air.
I like that.
And I don't think Baker doesn't need to win that way.
No, he
like he doesn't have to do that.
That's a good transition point. I don't think he does that either. With Nate, did you have a closing thought before we transition?
I think we're about to go into what I wanted to touch on.
Okay, so literally that's a good transition point of he doesn't need to do that. And the reason he doesn't need to do that, you thought we was done. This is the last thing we wanted to touch on with the Browns, is because they might have I personally don't think they're there yet, but they have potential to be one of the greatest running back duos of all time. Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt. These guys are the real deal, man. Nick Chubb can bust it from anywhere on the field. Kareem Hunt's one of the best, like, down-to-down backs in the league still. Like, I mean, let's be honest here. Who's been better? See, I know you prepped some stuff for these guys. Why don't you talk about it?
I mean, look. I think you're hilarious for bringing up the question.
I think I'm quite funny
too. But I get it. Just like you said, in a couple years, if they maintain the production that they had last year, then you can very well put them in the argument. Personally, I don't have them up there yet. But like I said, if they keep doing what they're doing, then they very well could be. But since we're talking about running back duos, I did some research, and just some of the running back duos that I researched, you had guys like Larry Zonka and Mercury Morse.
Throwback.
Which was way before our time. That was in the late 60s, early 70s.
Larry Zonka was the beast.
But generally, they're unanimously known as the best running back duo of all time. But just some other ones. I'm going to throw it back to some old ones, and I'm going to bring it back to some newer ones as well. But you got Franco Harris and Rocky Blyer from 72 to 80. They both like combined for 120 touchdowns and so forth. Jim Man, Brown, Bobby Mitchell.
Listen to this podcast.
And then just some of the more recent running back duos. You had Fred Taylor, Maurice Jones-Drew.
Oh, they were from 06 nasty. To 08,
which was a really good one.
That's a good one.
From 97 to 01, you had Warwick Dunn and Mike Allslott. And like over those course of 4 years, Warwick Dunn had 4,200 rush yards, 2,300 receiving yards, 26 touchdowns. Mike Allslott had 3,600 rush yards and 43 touchdowns. So,
little Tiki Barber, Ron Dane.
That was. Tiki Barber and Ron Dane was one that I did see, but I didn't feel
Ron
like
Ron was a letdown. He never averaged over 4 yards a carry.
Exactly. D'Angelo Williams, Jonathan Stewart, which is a more current one. That's a great one. LaDainian Tomlinson, Michael Turner, Larry Johnson and Priest Holmes, even though they were part of the same backfield for 4 years, but generally one of them was hurt. I know Larry Johnson's rookie year, I think he didn't get a lot of burn, but his next year, Priest Holmes went down with an injury, and Larry Johnson had a crazy.
Was it Sean Alexander and Ricky Waters? No. Were they together?
That's a good one as well. Deuce McAllister, Reggie Bush,
that was a good one.
Ricky Williams, Ronnie Brown. And then I'm going to end it with this one. One that we can, this was the first running back duo we probably all heard about, knew about, fell in love about before we even fell in love with football. And it's Gale Sayers and Brian Piccolo.
Oh, Brian Piccolo. That's a good one. That's a good one.
Brandon got this funny look. I forget Brandon's a little older than us.
Yeah.
Bro, you didn't read Brian's songs in like elementary
Brandon's
school?
Brandon's new to the NFL. Remember that. He was a college guy.
There's a movie.
Yeah.
There's a movie.
Yeah, there's a movie, right? But there's a book too. Yeah,
that's what the movie was based on.
Great. Right.
Yeah, I'm aware.
Y'all want to see some amazing for our younger cats? If you really want to do some research on these guys, there's a documentary made by NFL Films. It's called Crunch Course. I watched it over and over again as a kid. It's for free on YouTube. Someone has the whole documentary up on there. You want to see Larry Zonka highlights and see how filthy that man was. And what he did on the football field, just carrying piles of dudes 20 yards down the field. Go watch Crunch Course on YouTube. It is one of the best NFL documentaries you'll ever see. You'll see a different side of the NFL. Larry Zonka was an absolute man amongst boys when it came to running the football.
Woody, I want to see you carrying
people. I can carry you into the end zone, that's for sure.
Go out and start a game of backyard football with third graders and fourth graders, and I want to see you run.
It's a lot like that scene of Kevin James and King of Queens when he coached the kids football team. That, yeah. Heisman. Oh, my God. Actually, I was in Japan once. I was helping build a wall around an orphanage in Japan, and we.
That sounds so fucked up.
Protecting orphans?
Building a wall around orphans? I mean, look, so, I don't know. You just got to rephrase.
Anyways.
Like, why am I building
so
a wall around
orphans? We were, it was their recess, like, and they were all the kids were playing soccer, and I didn't want to play, and they're like, no, come play. And I was like, because now I'm competitive. I don't want to. So I'm out there like,
I'm building this
dude,
wall.
I'm out there deacon kids, and I went and like tried to kick like a long goal, and I just ping the ball right off this little kid's head, and he like fell on the ground, and I like the kid's crying, and I had to say, I'm so sorry. I don't want to play. I'm not gonna play anymore.
You should have taught him about toughness at that point. That's what you should have did. I'm like, yo, stop crying. Hey, get up. It ain't hurt that bad. So ball.
Bow to your sensei. Bow to your sensei.
Right. All right. So I think it's interesting, this running back duo, simply because once, like, Nick Chubb is going to need a new contract next season. And then the season after that, Kareem Hunt's going to need a new deal if they have the money to sign him. In my opinion, when this duo breaks up, the Browns window for being able to sustain this level of competitiveness has closed.
No.
You just got to – you either sign Chubb or you draft.
Yeah, no.
Put too much stock in the running back position.
You let one go, you sign.
Well, I'm not
– it's about the front five, man.
No, sorry, CJ. What I'm trying to say is that I agree with you on the front five. That O-line is
– I said they had one of the best O-lines in the league, so we touched on it.
What I do think
– have one of the best again.
What I do think is the biggest issue here is that – Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt are so dynamic that they cover up some of Baker's flaws. So my question is, can Baker succeed with only one of them? So in my opinion, if they can't retain them both, they either have to go look at getting a different quarterback that can actually do the job and win games with just one of them, or they have to retain both of them and then sign Baker. Like, they've got a lot of the rent checks are coming due soon, is what I'm saying.
I actually had that in my notes
here in the outline. Just kind of referencing that, hey, Chubb is due for a contract soon. Nate, as you touched on, Hunt, same thing. He has a year or two left on his contract. I don't really know. Just on the surface, when I look at Cleveland's draft needs on offense, I can't think of them needing any one thing on offense. You know, you don't need a receiver, weapons on the outside. You don't need running backs. You don't need offensive linemen. So I'm like, okay, draft defense. You draft defense, but at the same time, why not look at go ahead and drafting a running back in the second or third round this year?
Because you know one of them's going to
kind of do what Packers did last year and like, hey, let's go ahead and get some insurance early. And you got guys like Michael Carter and Javonte Williams out of North Carolina, who a lot of people have been comparing Javonte Williams to Nick Chubb. So I think you can get a stud. I think you can probably, you know, keep him clean with a deep backfield, not really run him into the ground, run Chubb and Kareem Hunt into the ground. And I mean, hey, I look, whatever you do, do not pay running backs. Just don't pay the running backs.
Yeah, I agree with that. I got two
coming
other
from, don't coming pay from him. coming from the guy whose running back just got $90 million.
I know it hurts me to say that.
So here's
the thing. It hurts me to say that.
Like, this is why I say the window's closing very quickly. Chubb is due next season. Hunt and Baker are due the season after that.
Mm. Yeah, it's gonna be tough.
You can reopen that window though. You know what? It's better that your window is closing from your running back position, so to speak, as opposed to your quarterback.
Running back is the easiest position.
It's way harder to find a franchise quarterback. So if you can just kind of keep your same system and not have to replace the running back, the quarterback position, and just kind of, I guess, retool at running back, I think that would be the best case scenario.
And before we wrap it up, teams are thinking. I got three other running back duos I thought of that were nasty. One more recent, we forgot of Mark Ingram, Alvin Kamara. People really slept on them.
Alvin Kamara,
they were a great 1-2 punch. Napoleon Kaufman and Tyrone Wheatley from the Raiders Super Bowl year.
Ooh,
that was a great one. That was a great one. People really slept on Napoleon Kaufman. Rushed 1,500 yards that year they went to the Super Bowl. People do not remember that. And my last one, Robert Smith and Leroy Horde. Woo. Those boys are nice.
I like that.
Robert Smith. People forget how good he was. He retired at 29 because he wanted to be a lawyer.
All these former Michigan players.
Yeah. You know,
Robert Smith was Ohio State, actually.
Doing my research, a lot of those guys was on there. They just didn't quite make the cut. But yeah, Leroy Horde was a dog.
Yeah.
Another one, man, Curtis Martin and Lamont Jordan for the Jets.
That was real
late
good.
90s. Yeah, early
2000s. Lamont Jordan, I mean, that's it was power. So,
oh yeah, that's a good one.
I like that one.
Yeah. So,
all right.
And then, my Cowboys, Marion Barber, Julius Jones. But I mean,
Marion Barber III was one of the funnest running backs to watch ever for like 2 years in the NFL.
I broke my elbow because of him.
Really?
Yeah.
That's wild,
bro. He's my favorite player. Yeah, they had
Lawrence. Marion Barber was. Did you even mention the college years?
Yeah.
When he's at Minnesota Lawrence with Maroney.
They were nasty.
Barberoni.
Another Belichick
whiff. The Barberoni backfield.
Yeah, Jesus.
He took Maroney in the first. Remember that? All right, guys.
Yeah.
Well, we ran long today, but I honestly, it was a hell of a show. I love the energy that was brought. That's going to wrap up our NFC North. AFC North. And next week, we're going to move on to the NFC South, right? We'll save the West the best for last.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, guys. And then we got the draft coming up in a month. Football's starting to ramp back up. Loving it. All right. As always, check us out at the number four.
Just to slow back down.
At the
June.
Number five Tool Sports Podcast on Instagram and TikTok. Number5ToolSportsPodcast.com. Check us out. Shout out to M Cash for our fire theme song. Let the drums beat.
My mama says she know that I ain't living right. I'd rather chase my dreams than live with regrets. Sometimes I think I let my demons get the best, but God be watching me with every step. So many nights, man, I was stressing and finessing, had to hustle to acquire a check. Man, I'm just glad that I'm allowed to tell my story. What's a testimony without a